Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan's!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. It is a Monday afternoon edition. It is with Luke, but no Brian this afternoon. I am Luke Mathers, your host for the hour. I got Evan on the board. Evan, hope you're doing well, buddy.
Oh yeah, dude. So well.
Yeah, and it was a quick weekend. It's always too short, but you're telling me 2 days was too long? You're feeling guilty now? You got
Man,
a 2 day weekend?
I guess, hey, guilty could be a word. But yeah, it's like I don't know what to do with myself. Like I'm letting someone down somewhere is how it felt this weekend. For those unaware, first weekend I've had 2 days off in a row in a long, long time.
And Evan, I'm going to let you know that you shouldn't feel ashamed for it. You shouldn't feel guilty. You shouldn't feel anything, buddy. We appreciate all your hard work around here. And we're glad that we got you on the board today, this afternoon, helping out. So enjoy those 2 day weekends. They're necessary. And I know Brian and I actually had to lean on you a little bit this weekend, though. You had to help out a little.
Just
because,
a tiny bit. And it was fine, dude. I was like, this is what I was made for.
Well, it was kind of one of those funny things because Brian texts me Saturday afternoon. He's like, hey, man, I am at the state fair, but I need you to make this quick change real quick. And so I just called him up. And I was like, hey, man, I can't help you because I am also at the state fair right now.
And I never go anywhere, so this is perfect.
Well, and he like let me know. He's like, okay, well, I texted Evan the same time I texted you, so we got it all sorted out. And then Brian and I, since we were both at the state fair, we got to get together and catch up for a little bit and had a beer.
Oh, that's awesome.
I got to meet his lady for the first time I had met Amy, and they got to see Kelsey, and it was a good time. And so Brian and I got to... catch up a little bit while we were off the air at the State Fair, Wisconsin State Fair, this past weekend.
Nice.
So it was good times. But he is off being Superman for this network of stations that you are listening to right now. That is Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios here on Madison's Near West Side. You're also listening to my voice on the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM out in Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, that's 98.9 FM, 1230 AM, as well as locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, and that is on 97.5 FM, WFHR, 1320 AM.
I thought that was Wisconsin Rapids, Delaware.
No, Wisconsin Rapids, yeah. Wisconsin. I like to say it sometimes because it's kind of like the Bond, James Bond, but like flipped a little. Yeah. But so Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. It's a nice little Wisconsin sandwich up there, or I guess a Rapids sandwich up in Wisconsin Rapids. But folks, the phone lines are open 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Open all hour long. And essentially, last week was a whirlwind. And if you hadn't heard yet, I will let you know that Michael Gableman is out of a job. And that was the Friday news dump. And
it was gorgeous.
And
man.
And I kind of unplugged this weekend. Like I said, I went to the state fair, got a lot done around the house on Sunday. And I almost forgot that Gableman got fired on Friday when I started looking at headlines, getting back in the swing of things for work today.
Yeah, looking for some sweet Gableman deets, you know?
No,
like, what's up there? Yeah.
It was just like, oh, okay, where did I leave things off? Let's look at some stories. How do we pull these news reads together, get the listening audience informed with our news hits at the top and bottom of the hour? And I stumbled across the thing that Gableman's out of a job and all these Robin Voss news clips and whatnot. And it's just... It was kind of a second round. It was just like, you know, that second wind of happiness, knowing that Gableman hopefully will no longer be in the headlines. Hopefully. That is to say, Frankenstein's monster did not go away quietly in the Mary Shelley's classic novel, Frankenstein. So I have a feeling the doctor, in this case, would be Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, hasn't heard the last of his monster, and that would be Michael Gableman in this saga. For now, it sounds like the taxpayers are going to have some relief. It seems like the money that was wasted on this endeavor by the Republican-led state assembly and the special counsel's office that Michael Gableman was running, if you want to call it that, they're done spending taxpayer dollars for now. Gableman was notified via letter from the assembly speaker that he was out of a job. And along with that, we've got a lot of national news going on with the saga at Mar-a-Lago. And we were unpacking a lot of the state primary results from last Tuesday. So last week was kind of completely taken up by those three stories, primarily. But there was a lot going on across the state of Wisconsin outside of those stories that I want to recap today, because we did miss out on a lot of other local news. So I'm going to be diving into other local headlines, breaking those down, as well as taking your phone calls. 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but that's okay because we got Evan on the board and you on the phone lines. So some of the top stories that we missed, but this one is a top story from earlier this weekend. It was breaking last night at Six Flags Great America. We had another instance of gun violence here in this country. It is striking close to home again, and this time it's wild to me to think that a place that I went. Probably, I mean, I had a season pass to Six Flags for at least 3 or 4 years throughout my teenage years. My older brother had one. I used to beg him to take me down there with him as soon as I could drive. At 16, 17, and 18, I was driving. I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin. So a trip to Six Flags throughout the summer was just part of the summer experience. And you try to get down there as often as you can, hence the passes, so you could go and ride those rides as much as you wanted to. And unfortunately, it is just terrible to think that gun violence, again, is striking this community, because not far from the area that the 4th of July shooting happened, very close in that same Chicagoland area. And I have a little cousin right now who lives in that part of the Chicagoland, and he works at Six Flags. And thankfully, he on his Instagram last night, my fiance was letting me know that he posted that he was safe, because there was a shooting and it seemed to be just random. It was a random act of violence in the parking lot near the entrance of Six Flags Great America. And my little cousin marked himself as safe, and he let people know through social media that he was okay. But there was an Appleton connection as well. One of the individuals shot last night, a Appleton resident. So I'm pulling up here the story. And Evan, did you hear about this story going on in Six Flags yesterday?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Sort of as it was breaking.
It's incredible to think that we can't go a few weeks, really, without the fact that this is a story that is back in the headlines. Because it is that much in America's DNA, almost, where you can't escape these stories. So before we recap all of last week's stories, this is the headline over the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Appleton woman and two others injured in Sunday night shooting at Six Flags Great America, first posted in the Appleton Post Crescent. And a 19-year-old Appleton woman was among the injured Sunday night when three people were shot in the Six Flags Great America parking lot in Gurnee, Illinois, according to a news release from the Gurnee Police Department. The Appleton woman had a lower leg injury and was taken to a nearby hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. It happened about 8 p.m. on Sunday when a white sedan drove up to the entrance of the park and the suspect left the vehicle, fired shots, and quickly left. The shooting appears to be, quote, a targeted incident, police said, but the suspects didn't enter the park. So just a random person pulling up, doing a targeted, like, I don't know, Evan, have you ever been to the Six Flags?
It's been a handful of years, but yeah, you know, you've got that sea of parking lots sort of surrounding the park, you know, some commercial businesses surrounding that, and yeah, just filled up with police. It was amazing.
It's just like, I mean, it was just a huge portion of me growing up was going to this park all the time. Like, I can picture it vividly in my head of where I have walked through many, many times of my life. And just to see more of this violence occurring it's tragic. So a 19-year-old Appleton woman, one of the injured out of the three injured from the shooting, thankfully it sounds like no life-threatening injuries across the board, but there's still updates to be had about that. So that is what was breaking here with the Wisconsin Connection last night. But some of the other stories that we didn't get to quite talk about in full detail last week because of the coverage of the state's primary election results on Tuesday. Broke down a lot of anticipation Monday and Tuesday, shared all those results, had an excellent interview with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. He joined me for the entire hour last Wednesday, breaking down those results and talking about a piece that he has published over at the New York Times opinion page. It actually got printed in this past Sunday's edition as well. So Dan, shout out to him, doing excellent work there, recapping the generational difference between the now set U.S. Senate primary or U.S. Senate general election race that will be between incumbent Senator Ron Johnson, Republican, and Democratic Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who won the Democratic nomination last week and is going to be going up against Rojo this November. So excellent piece by Dan Schaefer over at the New York Times opinion column. You should definitely go check it out if you have not already heard it. He also joined Pat Kreitlow on Up North News this morning with Pat Kreitlow. That keep an eye out for that podcast. That was the second hour, so the 9 a.m. hour. Jeez, it is Monday. Sorry, folks. But Dan Schaefer joined Pat for the couple segments during the 9 o'clock hour this morning and recapped that piece and the generational difference. So if you haven't heard Dan talking about it yet, you can go check out the podcast of Dueling Tangents or of Up North News with Pat Kreitlow over at Civic Media's podcast library, which is growing. And if you want to learn more about these stations and the programming that we offer, go check out civicmedia.us to sign up for updates and to learn more. You are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but that is okay. We are recapping last week's stories. I'm going to dive into some more of the headlines that we did not get to talk fully about last week because of the primary coverage. And the greatest thing, Michael Gableman, no longer, hopefully, a burden to Wisconsin taxpayers, but I have a feeling we're still going to hear more about him. But kind of going to play this one ironically. Thanks for the memories, Gableman. Hopefully, we don't have to talk about you for a long while now. 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents. Share your tangent with me. We'll dive more into the headlines and your calls when we get back. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Oh, Brian this afternoon, but I got Evan on the board and you on the phone lines. 844-967-2789. It's a Monday afternoon. We're recapping headlines that we didn't get to fully talk about last week with the Wisconsin partisan primary results that were breaking down since last Tuesday night, as well as, you know, we got the Gableman news. Mar-a-Lago got searched because the former guy decided to leave the White House with some pretty highly classified top secret documents. So
then tried to shake down, you know, Mr. Garland.
I don't understand how it hasn't really, yeah, shaken him down. But how have we not also talked about the fact that there was evidence and records of him like eating / flushing down the toilet documents as well? How do we know that he hasn't been doing that with some of these for the list?
It might be that, you know, proving a negative sort of deal. Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's wouldn't just it be hard comical that that was what led to all of this? Just the fact that there was reports that Trump was eating or flushing down the toilet classified documents, and the FBI is like, well, we got to stop him from doing that. So,
Yeah. They call the plumber. You know, he comes down, he opens up the pipes, he's got the snake in there, and he starts pulling out A10 paper. Like, oh, my goodness gracious. Got to call the police.
Just like the, I can picture the movie 20, 30 years from now of like the, and it all fictional, obviously. None of this is going to be based potentially, in fact. Who knows? We don't know all the facts yet. So as they come out, but like the Saudis or the Iranians, like attempting to break into the septic system at Mar-a-Lago to try to piece together flushed documents for nuclear secret codes. It's just like, Oh my goodness. Well, I did not have that on my 2022 bingo card. So I suck at bingo. I'm just letting you know that I had no idea that any of these crazy stories were going to be included in 2022. So yeah, the former president flushing top secret documents down his toilet. Did not see that one coming. But because of those headlines, we missed out a few other local headlines that I want to dive into and talk about. So we had the shooting yesterday at Six Flags Great America down in Gurnee, Illinois. There was a 19-year-old woman from Appleton who was one of the individuals hit in the shooting. So hope she is recovering well, but she has non-life-threatening injuries and is at a local hospital down in Gurnee, Illinois. But this is a pretty big one that I want to set up first. First found it last week at Wisconsin Public Radio, written up by Bridget Bowden. And this is the headline. Two Minnesota men charged with federal crimes in 2020 Kenosha unrest. Now, after the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Illinois, there was a lot of protest against police brutality and discussion about the use of how police officers here in the state of Wisconsin and around the country authorize use of force. And this was a recurring theme throughout the year of 2020. When George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police officers. That was, I believe, like Memorial Day weekend of 2020. We're in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of places are shut down, reopening back up right around that same time, though, too, at the end of May, because the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that the governor did not have the authority to do the safer at home order. So things were opening back up again. Protests were happening still at the height, with very little knowledge of what the COVID-19 pandemic had in store. Fast forward a little bit throughout that summer and Jacob Blake gets shot in Kenosha. And the first night of protests saw a lot of people out. And then the subsequent nights led to a lot more of the violence. I believe it was the third or fourth night when the Kyle Rittenhouse shooting happened. When Kyle Rittenhouse killed two people and mortally wounded a third, was, I believe, the third night of unrest in Kenosha. And now we are getting details from a federally charged case. This was a federal indictment of two Minnesota men who traveled from the St. Paul area to Kenosha in a coordinated effort after the Jacob Blake shooting, to cause social unrest. They planned arsons. They planned robberies. They planned the looting that everybody on the right-wing media wanted to blame the protesters for.
Well, they were giddy. They were downright giddy that they could sort of, you know, villainize this. Really,
they were
just terrible situation.
And I still fully expect them to come out. It was a dynamic that Rebecca Clayfish launched her gubernatorial race on. She has since lost that nomination process for the Republican Party here in the state of Wisconsin. But when she announced officially, after she ran a dark campaign for 3.5 years, since she lost in 2018, she was running the 1848 Project, which was a shadow campaign. She hired everybody from that nonprofit to her campaign team. And immediately when she announced, had all of the resources and staff and personnel ready to go, which is illegal. That coordination is illegal. And for whatever reason, individuals here in Wisconsin just looked the other way, apparently, when the former lieutenant governor and gubernatorial candidate did that. But Rebecca Clayfish launched with pictures of Kenosha and the rioting and the unrest and tied it all together. They liked it, the scene, to link together that civil unrest. This was what Tony Evers was trying to do. He didn't go in quickly enough. This is what Democratic leadership looks like. And now we're finding out federal prosecutors have charged two Minnesota men with crimes relating to arson and looting that took place during unrest in Kenosha in the summer of 2020. The complaint describes alleged arson and looting that took place the night of August 24th into the early morning hours of the 25th at three businesses in Kenosha. Gas station, a CVS, and a bar. And we're going to dive into this case a little bit more because I think this is an important aspect to talk about. that we're now finding out that there were opportunists that were going and coordinating these crimes while civil protests were taking place to try to link the protests, from what it sounds like. We still don't know all about the federal charges here. We're going to dive into a little bit more when we get back from this break. Folks, this is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but with Evan on the board and you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, who's playing Superman for the station. But I got Evan on the board, you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. We are recapping some of the stories that you may have missed last week with the primary election results that we were breaking down all last week, as well as the Gableman news and some of the Trump Mar-a-Lago news, the former guy. But as I was touching base on this story before we went to the break, we've got two Minnesota men charged with federal crimes in the 2020 Kenosha unrest. And so law enforcement went through and essentially found all of the video evidence, Evan, of this case as it unfolded, because it was all on camera. We found out as well. And these two are just the two latest individuals to be charged, a 24-year-old man and a 30-year-old man. Were charged in April with conspiracy to commit offenses against the United States. That's the crime that they're facing. Conspiracy to commit offenses against the United States. The complaint was unsealed when they were indicted last Tuesday. So this is what was going on. The best of the reading of this federal complaint, these individuals, along with three other Minnesota men, who were also charged last year in relation to the arson and burglary, the complaint says that the unrest in Kenosha began after the Jacob Blake, a black man, was shot by Kenosha police officer Rusty Shekin on August 23rd, 2020. On August 25th, Illinois teenager Kyle Rittenhouse shot three people, killing two. Last fall, a jury acquitted him of all charges. So this complaint is literally smack dab in the middle. These five Minnesota men came after the Jacob Blake shooting on the 23rd, on the 24th, led to the arson and looting that Kyle Rittenhouse himself used as the justification of why he was there with his gun the next day. And so, literally, this has been talked about, how there was scenes in Minneapolis last year after George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis Police Department. Police officer. He wasn't killed by the department. Excuse me. There were men walking around in all black with tactical gear that were smashing open windows and then getting in vans and driving away. There are actors out there that are trying to make it seem like rioting and looting was hand-in-hand in connection with the protests against police brutality, that these two are two in the same. And it is crazy to think that we have to wait 2 years to find out that, no, in fact, there was actually coordination by opportunists that wanted to link those two together and went and committed those crimes of arson and looting in an attempt to make it a media narrative that was linking the two. And it's just crazy that we're finally seeing this unsealed indictment of these men who were charged for the planned attacks in Kenosha in 2020.
And just imagine, if we had a politicized Justice Department, they'd be trotting this from the highest hilltops using, you know, the loudest megaphone they had. You know? And yeah, technically, that's the sort of stuff we'd love to hear. We'd love to have that vindicated. But no, that's not how a professional agency operates. So yeah, 2 years is a long time. But I'm glad that, you know, we're getting we're getting some of this back.
I don't know if we're getting it back, though, Evan. It's just, it's there are still those political opportunists out there. There are still people that are going to frame this upcoming fall's election, Governor Evers and down ballot, for individuals, especially more conservative individuals attacking Democratic incumbents, blaming them for that unrest in 2020, even though these were coordinated efforts by bad actors from out of state. Literally, Kyle Rittenhouse came from Illinois, and these men charged came from Minnesota. These were not Wisconsinites that were doing these crimes. These were coordinated efforts, and I'm honestly, we've seen the three percenters and the Proud Boys lock arms with Kyle Rittenhouse since that trial and since the shooting. When he was on bail, he was in a bar in Kenosha, drinking on an underage drinking with these individuals, and so. I'm curious to know to the further extent that we are going to get details out of these federal indictments, because they were charged and now the sentencing is going to come down. But that is a heck of a conspiracy. Like, the crime is conspiracy against the United States. Conspiracy to commit offenses against the United States. So those charges better be coming down heavily, is all I got to say, because we need to have that conversation that the media narrative, especially the conservative media narrative, that the unrest had to do exclusively with the protests, is completely undone when you find out that the looting and rioting that occurred and the arson that occurred was from bad actors coming in from out of state and taking advantage of a narrative that wanted to frame it that way and then did. And so that is one of the major headlines that I feel like we did not get to talk about nearly enough. And it's something I will be keeping an eye on as those court cases develop. The next one up we got is Milwaukee and incumbent Governor Tony Evers, one step closer to closing the long embattled Lincoln Hills Youth Prison in northern Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin. And so I got a piece again over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because the Milwaukee Common Council supports a new juvenile prison on the city's northwest side to replace Lincoln Hills. This is by Allison Dyer over at the Sentinel. A proposed site for the new youth prison in Milwaukee to replace Lincoln Hills gained its first key approval Friday from the city's Common Council just days after the plan was announced. It was an 11-1 vote in support of the measure, followed brief comments from council members about the upcoming process and assurances that there would be opportunities for the public to weigh in as the neighbors expressed alarms about their lack of input ahead of the vote. So this is the first vote, and still, some residents of Milwaukee are nervous. And that's been the hardest part about this process, has been finding a replacement site for Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the two juvenile facilities in north central Wisconsin, that for the better part of a decade, longer than a decade now, we knew from the former Governor Walker administration that these sites needed to be closed down. And Governor Evers, when he was first elected in 2018, vowed that he would close them, and he worked to try to do that. But the Republican-led Wisconsin legislature did not work with him on that goal. And it took until the end, one of the last things that snuck in this last legislative cycle before the Republicans in the Wisconsin State Assembly and State Senate decided to go take a 10-month paid vacation, 9.5 months in some cases, but take that better part of the year off, was that they approved a fund for the selection of a new site for this juvenile facility. And so Milwaukee Common Council has now began the process, passed an approval to begin the process for finding this new site. And the only reason the Republicans passed that in this last legislative cycle, before they went on the paid vacation, was because Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu seemed to want to try to angle and say that the only reason they passed it was because former Lieutenant Governor and at the time gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish asked them to. So not that she was in power or anything like that to have any say over the facility, site selection or anything. She's been out of government for the last 4 years. But the Republican leaders wanted to give a seeming win to former Lieutenant Governor Clayfish in this process, despite Evers being the one in the governorship and calling for this to happen. So we've got a vote from the Milwaukee Common Council. It is still a long way from being done, but we've got a potential site in Milwaukee where a new youth facility will be located. So let's head over to the phone lines. We've got one Earl Ingram calling in on the topic.
Who is this guy?
Earl, what's on your mind today? What's going on, man?
Man, congratulations. You guys sound really, really good. And the subject that you are talking about, you know, I've lived in the city my entire life. The Lincoln Hills issue has been going on for the better part of 10 years. As there has been an ongoing fight from family members whose children have been jettisoned off to Lincoln Hills 10 miles away. And when you're talking about juveniles who've been mistreated in that prison, this argument about finding a location has been an ongoing thing. And finally, after all of this debate, finally a site comes up. And, you know, the argument that Republicans have, you're right on point with that, Luke. Luke.
Yeah, but say you're right on the money.
You got my yeah, you got it right.
Yeah, you're right on the money. And so what has happened is they were going to tear down a facility that has been in that place, an adult facility, mm-hmm. for the past 22 years, very successful facility right in the community where people who have been locked up can come and blend into the community and then turn their lives around. So they were going to tear that one down in order to build this facility. So it's been an ongoing just cluster, you know what. And so I'm happy to finally see that this is finally going to happen, and many others in this community are also happy. And it wouldn't have happened had it not been for Governor Tony Evers.
Yeah, been...
That's the thing that people need to know.
Yes, and the governor has been consistent in calling for the closure of Lincoln Hills and working... Republican-led Wisconsin legislature does not do Governor Evers any favors. They started off the relationship by passing lame duck legislation and having it signed by the outgoing governor to strip his office of powers. And you still hear that, oh, well, why hasn't Evers done more? Well, he's been hammering this issue throughout his entire first term, Earl. And the fact that we're finally seeing some motion on it, I think, is just because he has been working consistently at trying to make this happen. And so it's great to see that we've got a vote to begin the process with the Milwaukee Common Council. And yeah, I can only imagine this isn't an issue that I have watched that closely. I mean, I've known about it for the better part of the last decade, Earl, but I know that you have also been talking about it for the last decade.
You know, Luke, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Keep on doing what you're doing. The only thing I want to add is if the people don't understand by now how important Governor Evers is, then you know, it's tough enough to deal with other issues, but we have to do everything we can to make sure that Governor Evers remains the governor, or else, you know, more and more things that aren't good and right for the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, we're going to perish under that. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks for your call this afternoon, Earl. And yeah, I think it's interesting to note that this problems like Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake aren't problems that Republicans are truly looking to solve. It was a can that the Walker Clayfish administration continued to kick down the road. They did not adequately address the problems that got so bad to the point where now the facilities need to be closed in Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. So the ignoring of the problem does not solve the problem, and that's what the previous administration had done. And it's great to see that the hard work that this administration, the Evers administration, has been putting in to try to solve this problem seems to be leading towards a solution. And I'm not going to count the chickens before they hatch, but hopefully this site selection means that progress is going to be made, and hopefully the children, that's what they are, they're children, and yes, they may have broken laws and they need this facility, but they're children, and they should not be subject to the inhumane conditions at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lakes. So thank you, Evers, for working on this problem. Folks, this is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. One more segment left in the day. We'll be right back.
I'm pearly like the white, with whites of your eyes.
Back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but that's okay. We got Evan on the board. And a ton of Wisconsin headlines that we are catching up on that we missed last week because of the primary coverage and the other breaking news with Gableman being let go, no longer on the taxpayer dime, and, you know, just national secrets being stored insecurely down in Mar-a-Lago. Unsecurely? Insecurely.
Insecurely. Yeah. Insecurely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just incorrectly, I guess. There we go. That would be an in one.
And just the multitude of excuses, you
well,
know?
Well, not even... It's the Ron Johnson being caught trying to deliver the fraudulent electors all over again. Because it's like, oh, well, I mean, there better be a good reason that the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago. Okay, there was a classified... Well, if there was classified information down there, it was planted by the FBI. And even if it was if it wasn't planted by the FBI, it was declassified because the former president could have done that, and the other guy did it too. Obama did it, and just like...
Which, that one's easy, by the way. Every single piece of paper that a president touches, reads, or writes gets saved, and it gets archived. And when you leave office... That stuff is given to the National Archive, and then it's eventually given to, you know, the Presidential Museum that's set up in your hometown or wherever.
Wherever you want it to be. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, yes.
And classified documents do not make that trip, right?
No.
They stay with the National Archives.
Yeah. And so literally, like, he tries it's just been like a flowing of whataboutisms since last week, Monday. Like, it's just been all whataboutism. It pains me to have to, like, stay on the ball to, like, know. I've now researched and read a decent amount about how the National Archives archives presidential records. And that's all nonsense that I shouldn't have to know because, yes, Obama did it correctly. And all of the National Archives that are now in Chicago waiting to be part of the Obama Presidential Library are all correctly there. They're all still in the possession yep. of the National Archives. And they actually have a representative from the National Archives there to oversee them. There was no such person at Mar-a-Lago. So if you want to claim, like, what about it? Like, just stop it.
I love the standing order. The standing order to declassify anything as grubby little hands.
Well, I told Brian, I was like, it's probably most likely the same exact scenario that happened with Sidney Powell in the saga that led up to January 6th insurrection. Trump was meeting with lawyers over and over again trying to find widespread election fraud that did not exist. They were trying to make something up. They were trying to use the hearsay that they themselves were doing that was being reported in right-wing media ecosystems to then be able to go and seize the voting machines or implement fraudulent electors to have the state legislators overturn election results conducted in an election in Georgia, in Wisconsin, in Michigan. And so there were a variety of things that they were doing then. And Sidney Powell, one of the Kraken lawyer, if you recall her, she essentially was appointed to be a special counsel, similar to Michael Gableman here in Wisconsin. Sidney Powell was appointed by Trump in one of these meetings, and the officials with the Department of Justice just ignored it. Trump was like, I appoint you special counsel. And everybody else, the Justice Department, was just like, yeah, you can't do that. We're not doing that. She's not going to be a special counsel to investigate the voting machines. It's not going to happen. There's no there. There's no justification. And so I have a feeling the standing order to declassify anything that Trump wanted to take with him was probably the same thing. Very similar. The only other example besides the Sidney Powell example is when Michael Scott in The Office thinks that he can declare bankruptcy by standing on a desk and declaring bankruptcy.
You can't just declare it.
It's not how it works, folks. It's not how it works. But the other story that we've got, I'm going to get to some phone callers, I guess, before. But we're recapping stories, and then we're going to hear from you on the phone lines. Up next this afternoon, we got our friend Jeannie in Eau Claire calling in. Jeannie, what's on your mind today?
Hi, guys. Great job as usual. Keep people informed. You know, what the former president did was a theft. He's a thief. He stole the documents, governmental documents, which he knew he was not supposed to take. And our senator, shameful man he is, who was, you know, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee,
mm-hmm.
I might add, yep. Which is frightening, and going around with a cover-up story to cover up what the president did. And it's just sick, and I hope every gall-darn one of them are held accountable legally and spend some time in the clink. Because what they've done to our country with the lying and misleading of people, causing them to get up in arms, literally, they should all be held accountable, and I'm hoping that they do, because I'll be very excited, because until they're held accountable, I think our level of safety has decreased significantly. So thank you so much, guys, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jeannie. Appreciate your call. And I don't know how much legal accountability there's going to be for one Ron Johnson in this whole saga. He's definitely devolved into one of Trump's biggest supporters in the U.S. Senate. And legally, I don't know how much he's going to face, how many legal consequences there will be for him. But I can tell you this, there is a chance for Wisconsinites to hold him politically accountable this November. Every Wisconsinite gets, every 18-year-old Wisconsinite gets an ability to cast a ballot this November to hold the incumbent senator here in Wisconsin accountable for the cover-up or just the support that he's provided to the former president for the last 5-6 years. It's that is the way that he could be held accountable, is politically at the ballot box this November. So appreciate your call, Jeannie. You could be like Jeannie. Give me a call, 844-967-2789. You can also be like our friend Mark from Prairie du Sac calling in. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you've been hitting a lot of the points. It's just amazing. It sounds like Rebecca Clefish was flaunting what was left of our election integrity laws, you know, in her little run for governor. I mean, that's just kind of disgusting. And that the fact that the whole fake electors thing hasn't been brought more to a head. I mean, that Spindell is still on the election commission. That should not be. I mean, that Josh Caldas needs to go out there and indict those guys and hold them to account. I mean, that it has to. We have to hammer home the points you're making. I mean, and for the point we hear from our conservative callers all the time, especially CJ, all the riots in Kenosha and all this. Well, I wonder how much percentage of the violence was caused by these right-wing instigators that were there at these things trying to get something going. If it was more than 50%, that should be brought up.
Unfortunately, Mark, there's no way for us to know the true number, but we can see that the origins of that violence, at least in a few instances, at a CVS and at local bars called a watering hole or something, somebody's watering hole on 10th, and a Citgo gas station. Those three instances, we know the arson and the looting of those businesses were done in a coordinated effort by anywhere from 3 to 5 individuals from the St. Paul area. Minnesota individuals coming and coordinating that rioting and the looting and arson. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. I will be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.